This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Detroit's great writer and activist Adrienne Marie Brown once pointed out that the experience of Black Americans is, by definition, a story of science fiction and fantasy. Enslaved ancestors had to dream up a Black future that was unlike anything that they themselves experienced. One of our most vital labs for science fiction and fantasy narratives today is in the comics. A new virtual exhibition at Michigan State University's museum lays out a full panorama of Black futures as envisioned in the panels. It's called Beyond Black Panther: Visions of Afrofuturism in American Comics. And its curator is Julian Chambliss. He is an English professor at MSU and also a curator at the museum. Julian, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
I imagine that this exhibition also gave you a place to explore your own passion for comics.
Yeah, I'm a longtime fan of comics. My research is in comics, and this was an opportunity to really think about the definitions around Afrofuturism and the way they rely on, at some level, on comics, and to make that visible through the exhibit.
Now, the exhibition focuses on what it means to have Black characters and Black creators, of course, but also true Afrofuturism as a basis for stories. What does Afrofuturism mean in the context we're using it here?
Right. So I like to ask people to think about Afrofuturism as the intersection of speculation and liberation. And in the context of comics, these are stories and characters that have something to say about the future from a Black perspective. And Afrofuturism, in the definition that was sort of coined in the 1990s, really put a lot of emphasis on Afrofuturism as a sort of thought process, as a sort of philosophy in the pages of Black created and Black drawn comics. At the time, the example that the Mark Derry, the theorist that coined the term, was using was Milestone Comics, which is a very famous comic book company of the early 1990s. It's associated with Dwayne McDuffie, who is with the school, the University of Michigan. And those characters really highlighted the full scope of the possibilities around a kind of Black futurity. And this emphasis that Derry put on Black-owned and Black-written comics really inspired me to sort of think about what does that mean in a more historically robust context, right? And so one of my goals with this exhibit, I hope to inspire people to want to do more with Black comics. And so our goals here are to get people to think about this idea that Black visions of the future run a really robust set of different pathways that are united around certain thematic concerns.
Yeah. I want to talk about that a little bit more, but if we could return to Milestone Media for a moment, could you, for those who aren't familiar, could you lay out Milestone's origin story, as it were?
Sure. Milestone was a comic book imprint that was owned by several Black creators, so sort of principals or Dennis Cohen, Mark Dingle, and Dwayne McDuffie. Christopher Priest was involved in early stages. This was a company that all these creators had worked in comics. And so they created a whole story world called Dakota, the Dakotaverse. And they set, and Dakota is basically Detroit. One of the things I write about in comics is, like, you know, comics are an archive of the American experience. And comics and cities are really tightly connected. And so many comic book cities are referencing real places. In Dakota's context, it's Detroit. They just accept it.
We're fortunate to live in this era when the Marvel movie Black Panther brought an Afrofuturist vision to full-color panoramic life. It's just, it's an amazing film. But at the same time, the title of the exhibition, Beyond Black Panther, hints that this is about more than just Marvel doing an Afrofuturist movie with Ryan Coogler. Could you say more about that?
Right. So one of the things that I wanted to do, and as the title sort of indicates, is that we want to push beyond the sort of idea that Black Panther represents the singular vision of Afrofuturism in comics. And our goal in this exhibit was to try to signal to people that there are many different Black-owned comics that engage in future-oriented narrative or engage in what we can understand as sort of Black speculative practice, that they're considering Black past, present, and future through stories that are rooted in the experience of the African diaspora and take into account and present stories and characters that represent a complexity connected to that diaspora, right? So these are, for the most part, all independent comics that many people would not have the opportunity to see if they weren't, you know, brought to their attention because of the nature of the comic book industry, which is still in many ways a very niche industry. The characters that we know that dominate popular culture are characters that are very old, but they're also not unimportantly connected to major corporate media conglomerates, right? So they're in a position to put those characters to use in a kind of multimedia, digital streaming environment. So these are creators and characters that are no less inventive, no less adventurous in what they're doing. But unless you go to very specialized places, you're not going to see them. And so the goal of sort of jumping off from some of the ideas represented in Black Panther, Marvel's Black Panther, the film and the comic, and thinking, you know, this idea is there, this idea is also here in this comic that you probably haven't heard of.
What are some of the key concepts that you feel like we ought to be looking for that might suggest an Afrofuturist ethos?
Right. So, you know, a lot of Afrofuturist theorists will point us to some recurring themes that unite Afrofuturism. One is an aesthetic. So when you see something that's Afrofuturist, one thing that jumps out is that there's an aesthetic that speaks to a kind of African context, tribal context, space. There's colors, themes, and textures that unite Afrofuturism that are drawn not from a European modernist context, but from perhaps an Afro-diasporic context that is more natural, less industrial, more greens, more orange, more reds versus more metal, gray, things like that. So there's that. There's a metaphysics, a spirit element that's very important. I think a lot of Afrofuturism speaks to a kind of spiritual practice, not necessarily rooted in a Judeo-Christian perspective, but in fact rooted in other faith beliefs that we might associate with the African experience. And here, this question of ancestors, spirit, and memory all tied up in that space of the metaphysical. In the Black Panther film, the spirit plane that T'Challa goes to talk to his father and see his ancestors, that's an example of this sort of spiritual practice. But much of African-American and much of African folklore speaks very, very strongly about the importance of ancestors, about the importance of them still being with you, about them not going away, and the practices that maintain them as part of your everyday life. There's also this question of science. Much of our sense of modernity is rooted in a European understanding of science. What does it mean for us to think about really the long and complex history of African thought and practice and its contributions to science? And in the American context, and I'm careful to recognize that this comic book driven show is an American comic book driven show. There are real contributions made by people of color that are obscured in the narrative of progress and innovation in the American experience. And so this is a place where we can have some attention drawn. And then, of course, the question of community is also very important.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking today with Julian Chambliss, professor of English at Michigan State University. He's also a curator of history at the MSU Museum. His latest exhibition is titled Beyond the Black Panther, Visions of Afrofuturism in American Comics, and it opens this Tuesday. There was a book that's mentioned in the exhibition that I really fell in love with that I think touches on some of the themes you're talking about. It's called The Invention of E.J. Whitaker by the Gibbs sisters, Shawnee and Chantel. Could you tell us a little bit about the book?
Sure. The Invention of E.J. Whitaker is a great comic by, as you say, the Gibbs sisters. And it tells the story of a black female inventor at a period that you might not associate with black female invention, which is the early 20th century. She actually lives on the campus of Tuskegee University, and the Gibbs sisters actually, as they were researching this book, visited Tuskegee. Tuskegee, of course, is the home and the university created by Booker T. Washington. And in the story, E.J. is the daughter of a professor, a plant biology professor, actually. But she herself is an inventive genius who's created a flying machine, a robot, and many other things. And you're, in the story, finding out about her and some of the stir that she created with a new flying machine that she's been testing out. And people are looking for her, and they're looking for that flying machine. So I promise every one of the creators, I wouldn't give away too much of the story in this exhibit. So if you're interested, you can buy that comic on Comixology, or you can go to their website, Bebop Books, and get the first issue.
It's such a great book because it has, you know, a real steampunk vibe to it. The art is great. The story, you know, the story's really snappy. And it just feels like such a great example about how ideas about black futures can come to us through black history.
Yes. And I think that that's one of the things that inspires all of these books at some level, sometimes very directly, like in that case, or in the case of like Greg Anderson Elise's Izani the Were-Spider, which draws very heavily on folk tales that he heard as a child that come from the Caribbean. It's a supernatural tale, but at the same time, you know, those are the kinds of stories that we all remember hearing from ancestors and you know, grandparents and elder community members when we were kids, like, you know, ghost stories and stories of the past. And he uses that to create a really sort of adventurous father-son story about this sort of African god, which is very, very, very typical to the diaspora in some way. So all of them, I think, touch on this way that we can think about a more diverse and a much more interesting way of thinking about black culture, black futures, but also the past, right? Afrofuturism never lets go of the past. It is always engaged in that process of recovery, because that, in fact, is something that people of color in a contemporary moment are engaged in as they try to formulate a more positive future.
Julian, comics is such a thin margin business, despite the fact that we now see graphic novels in bookstores and some titles become million-dollar properties. Most of the people working in comics do an insane amount of work for very little profit. What does the milestone story say to you about black creators in the industry?
You know, it speaks to the need for black creators and the black audience, or the audience that looks for diversity, to be more aggressive in that at some level. Milestone was the most successful black-owned comic book company in history in a very real way, right? They published hundreds of issues of comics over their relatively short period. And comics, as you say, are a very hard business. If a comic book lasts for 20 issues, that's not a bad run, right? Like, the comics that we know are characters that are legacy, right? But they were literally created between 1938 and 1960, a lot of them. But, you know, almost all the characters that are driving our media are that old, right? These independent creators that you can find in smaller publishing companies, they struggle to find the space on the shelf. But that's a complicated exercise, because the comic book shop works on demand. And if you don't know something exists, how do you demand it? I joke with my students, no one randomly tumbles into a comic book shop. If you would end up in a comic book shop, you went there on purpose. You just don't wander in. I mean, it just doesn't happen. You're going there for a comic book, which means that you know that they exist, which means that you found out where that was, which means that you want one. One of the reasons that digital comics and comics in graphic novel form are so important for independent creators is because they are on platforms where people can, in fact, come across them. And past success is a predictor of future success. And so new characters from new creators that are people of color telling different kinds of stories struggle to find space. And that is always been the case. And it continues to be the case. But the difference today is, I think, that you do have these sort of robust digital platforms and a company like Milestone, which had a very innovative distribution deal with one of the major distributors, DC, to get its comics everywhere, they would be taking advantage of the kind of social media, the kind of digital distribution. It's a complicated exercise to be a creator in comics because that's a very niche business, especially when you're independent creating characters on your own. And you rely on conventions, you rely on things like Kickstarter, you rely on word of mouth and networks of fans to keep you alive. But right now, we're in this weird place, or perhaps not weird place, but a place where all the desire to see things like Afrofuturism, to see sort of Black speculative work in various forms, are driving people to go out and find this stuff. You know, this exhibit is, in my way of saying, like, as you're consuming this, remember that there's a world of things that you might not see. And if, you know, the names that you see here, when you go and look for them out in the world, they're going to be nestled in a series of communities of creators that might be really interesting for you, right? Like, they might be telling steampunk stories like the Gibbs sisters. They might be telling really sort of sci-fi crime action stories like Jerome Walford. They might be telling sort of like historical adaptations or literary adaptations like John Jennings in Parable of the Sower. But they're doing all that work. All that work is happening all the time out there. So take a moment to explore.
Julian Chambliss is a professor of English at Michigan State University. He also curated Beyond the Black Panther, Visions of Afrofuturism in American Comics from Michigan State University's museum. And the exhibition is virtual. You can check it out on the MSU Museum's website link right now. Julian, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Arts and culture coverage on Stateside is supported in part by an award from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.